Welcome to the Alien Wellness Think Tank podcast series. The Think Tank is an emergency medicine organization led by residents for residents to improve the culture of wellness during residency training. Take a listen to our conversations with our wellness strategists and mentors.
Hi, everybody. It's a pleasure to have Geeta Penza join us today for the Hangout. So just to give you a little intro on Geeta, she's an E&M physician since 2001 and assistant professor at Brown with a particular interest in litigation stress. She currently is working on the L Word podcast, where she interviews physicians who have been through litigation. So it's great that we have her. We'll hopefully be able to discuss some things with regards to how being involved in litigation can affect us as physicians and learn from there. Geeta, thanks so much.
I'm so glad to be here. It's nice to meet all of you guys. So just by way of introduction, I just want to say a couple of things. Matt said I'm not a lawyer, but I've been involved in litigation for the last 12 years, and I'll tell you about that story. I really came to this place because having gone through the process, I realized that when I first got named, I didn't know what to do. I really had no training. No one had talked to me about, once you're sued, you should do X, Y, and Z. I was just completely stunned and taken aback. And I had all these emotions that I didn't know what to do with. And I felt isolated and ashamed. And I felt like I shouldn't talk to anybody about it. And I was also, I felt like I was a good doctor. I just thought it wouldn't happen to me. And boy, was I wrong. So I want to come to talk to residents about the fact that lawsuits are a fairly predictable occupational hazard when you practice medicine. And we don't like to think of them that way. And, I'm sure that your attendings don't want to talk about it, but I can guarantee you that you work with attendings who have been sued or who might be going through the process. And we're very sort of, in our own silos of suffering, trying not to upset anybody or to talk about it because we've been told not to talk about it. But that perpetuation of this whole can't talk to anybody about it really does nothing but worsen the feeling of isolation and shame that comes with being named in a suit. And somewhere between, depending on whose numbers you use and how long you practice, 2/3 to up to 90% of all doctors will be named in a lawsuit during their time that they're in practice. So obviously, all of these people aren't bad doctors. It is happening to the majority of us. And yet we just kind of perpetuate this, like, we don't really want to talk about it. It's embarrassing. And we're just going to pretend it doesn't happen. But that really kind of makes things worse for all of us. So I'll tell you my story. I graduated from residency in 2001. And so I was 5 years out when I was first named. And that was in 2006. Well, the case was 2006. I was named in early 07. And then there was a lot of time that went by, and we can talk about the mechanics of what happens during the actual process of a lawsuit. And I'll preface it by saying that Rhode Island is one of the sort of bad climate states for malpractice. I went to trial. I was the sole defendant, I'll say that, in a pretty big money case. When we went to trial in 2011, it was a 26-day trial. I was on the stand for 2 days. It was really quite grueling. And in the end, the figure that they came up with was $30 million is what they were asking for. And fortunately, I won. There was a verdict for the defendant. I would say it was a Pyrrhic victory at best. I was pretty wrecked by the whole process. And I didn't know if I wanted to go back to medicine. I just wanted to just walk away from everything. And it was really my chairman at the time, not Dr. Zink. I know that he's a great guy too, but this was pre-Dr. Zink in a different group. My chairman at the time had been super supportive through the whole process and was basically in the courtroom every day. He wasn't working. He would pull the nurses in. Like, they were all there for me. I didn't want them there, but they were there. And he basically said at the end of it, like, now you owe me 2 weeks. So just come back and try for 2 weeks. And if you say you can't do it, that's fine, but try. And then, I went back for 2 weeks and I was like, all right, like, I can do this. But I still wasn't well. I was still burnt out and bitter. And it was sort of a long slog getting back to feeling good about what I did. But here I am. So now I'm actually still in litigation for the same case. I went through the appeals process. The verdict was overturned on a technicality 2 years ago. And I'm returning to trial in April. Going to trial the second time, and this is why I actually can't give you all, I'll say this later, like, you can talk about the fact that you're going to trial all till the cows come home. I just can't tell you exactly what all the facts of the case are. Right. And so we'll talk about that in a little bit. When lawyers say to you, you can't talk about it, they don't mean you can't say, I'm getting sued and it sucks. You just can't give out the details of your case because, and the only reason, there's no law against that, but the plaintiff's attorneys will ask you, with whom have you discussed this case? And you need to be able to say, honestly, I have not discussed the details of this case with anyone except my attorney. Peer review is excluded. People sometimes talk about things hypothetically, not exactly about that case. That's, you got to kind of see where you draw your line. You just have to be able to say that honestly. So somewhere between trial A and trial B, I kind of realized that I don't want to be that trial A person going into the second trial. I decided to learn. I learned about the process the first time, and just having that experiential knowledge was very important. But then I decided, like, you know what? I'm going to read some books. Like, there's got to be some people who give good advice. And I did read one book before I went to trial the first time. And I actually have those books. I'll show them to you a little later what they are. But I did find it very helpful. And I was like, I'm going to read some more books. And I'm not only that, I'm actually going to do what they say. I'm going to take advice from people. And I'm not good at taking advice from people, but I'm going to try. And I have to say, like, you know, I'm not happy that I'm going back, but I can accept that this is part of doing business. Do I feel like a little like, gosh, this has been a really unfair long road because I feel like I actually rendered this person excellent care? Yeah, I feel like that a little bit. Can I live with that? I think so. I can certainly live with it. Does it make me feel like on certain days, like, gosh, I don't know if I can do this forever? Sure. Like, I have those days. But I've come back to a place where most days I'm pretty happy with what I'm doing. I've kind of made some changes in my professional career and I'm enjoying what I do now. And part of that is talking about litigation and litigation stress with residents and learners who probably don't get a whole lot about it in their training. We might give you some lectures about risk management because hospitals don't want you to get sued. But then we don't really tell you about what happens afterwards. Like, when you're out there and you get sued, what do you do? Like, who do you go to? How do you deal with it? Is it normal to feel this way? And some people, in part, you know, I know my story, but certainly a lot of the physicians that I've talked to during the course of these interviews that I've been doing, or just in passing, if people know that you're being sued, they'll volunteer to you, like, oh, you know, I was sued, and they tell you the story. During all of that, I realized that we all, you know, so many of us have this common shared experience that we keep to ourselves. And if we could just put out there that there are role models of resilience in this scenario, I think it would be much easier for you guys coming forward to say, like, oh, like, I know that doctor. She's a really good doctor. And she went through this and she got sued and she's still doing this and she seems okay. Like, I could be okay. I think that's really important. So I am sort of on this mission to get people to just open up and talk about it. It doesn't mean you were a bad doctor. It means that you were just like 75 to 90% of other doctors out there and you got named at some point. I kind of want to hear what you guys are interested in learning about. I think that there's a lot to be said about, you know, any of the areas that I outlined in terms of just risk management, trying to avoid being sued. And I want to make the point that you can do all of those things and still get sued because we are not immune to bad outcomes no matter what we do. We can talk a little bit more about just what to do in the case of an adverse event, whether or not you think that you are, you know, whether you've made a mistake. And if you did, honestly, like, it's really not that special because we all do. But there's really no great forum for us to talk about that outside of a peer review, sort of a, you know, a more punitive setting. And that's something that I feel like we also need to change because we all do make mistakes. I also think that, you know, we can talk a little bit about the mechanics of being sued, about deposition and trial. Really, I'd like you guys to sort of lead with some questions and I'm happy to tell you anything else about it, whatever you guys want to know.
When you initially got sued, and you got served papers in essence. Did you look at it as like the official initial shell shock where you kind of were like, why are they suing me? I'm a good doctor, or at least you think you are. And then did you start kind of second guessing what you did? Like that put you in a position where you're like, well, what else am I doing maybe wrong? Or did I do something wrong? And do I now need to kind of become this ultra conservative person who really works up everything because now maybe I'm not a good doctor?
Absolutely. And I think that that's a very common shared experience for almost every doctor that's been sued. Now, and I'm not talking about nuisance suits where you're just like, oh my God, like that's ridiculous. Like, and those things wouldn't change your practice. But, you know, for me, this was a fairly serious case and it involved a bad outcome in a young person. And I knew there was a lot at stake. And so I really 1,000 times backwards and forwards went over, what did I do? Could I have done something different? You know, you spend a long time replaying events if you remember it. Now, over half of people who are named in lawsuits don't remember the case. So it's, you know, a lot of people feel blindsided when they're sued. So it may not be that you are waiting for the other shoe to drop, but you've all probably experienced adverse events by now or just bad outcomes. And, you know, maybe you were expecting things to turn out differently. And then you have, so that sort of day where you're just like, oh God, like what could I have done differently? Did I do everything right? You're sort of obsessively recasting all those events in your head thinking, how could this have played out differently? That happens to sort of the nth degree when you get handed those papers. And part of that is just this natural psychology of an acute psychological stressor. So there is a normal, expected psychological response to an acute trauma or significant stressor that we would be wrong not to acknowledge that is just sort of normal human behavior. So the first step, so when you have that sort of trauma there, and it's, you can almost Kubler-Ross it too. There's sort of that aspect to it, but there's this first, you're, you know, in denial, like this can't possibly be happening because I am a good doctor or I did everything right. How could this happen? And then there's, while you're trying to sort of absorb and work through it, there is this whole cycle of emotions of, you know, that sort of imposter syndrome kind of comes through. There's a constant background of intrusional thoughts, where, you know, you can be working and then the thought kind of hits you like, man, like there's this case and I really messed up and I should, you know, and all of a sudden you kind of get flooded with all the same emotions that you felt when you were sued, when you were named first, because that's a big rush of stuff because it kind of hits you like a ton of bricks. A lot of times you're not expecting it. In some states, it's delivered by a sheriff. So like when you get served, you really get served. And it's really super traumatic. So those feelings will come back at times when you don't want them to come back. You could be trying to relax or just get your mind off something, or you're at work or whatever. And there's this cycle of it just kind of keeping coming. And if you can't work your way out of that cycle, it can become a fairly obsessive thing and you can develop some maladaptive behaviors. So it doesn't have to go that far, but it's really common to become at work more conservative. I think that fairly everybody that I've talked to feels like there's a pendulum and you can get stuck on that far side, or you can kind of come back to center a little bit as time goes by. You know, like in my particular case, there was an imaging study that, you know, they were arguing should have been ordered. And I really didn't feel like it was indicated. But when you're put in that position again, you feel like, gosh, maybe I should just order it to stay out of trouble. And not the way you want to practice. There is really no way to keep it from getting into your psyche like that. And you have to sort of work through it step by step before you can feel like you were sort of the doctor that you aspire to be again. But it really does eat at you sometimes.
During that initial period, right when you initially got served, was there anything that you remember doing that kind of helped you along? Something that you did that either got your mind off of it, or something that you did that helped you relieve some of that stress, or you did that made you feel more normal, for lack of a better word, or maybe not then, but something that you would suggest people should or could do?
Yeah. So in that initial period, I'm lucky in some ways in that I'm married to a physician. So part of what I tell people now is that you really need to talk to somebody who gets it. So if your spouse isn't medical or wasn't, you know, with you through your training or doesn't understand the degree of sacrifice or anything like that, you know, that's involved, they certainly should know what's happening, but they may not be the person that you really need to lean on. For me, being able to talk to my spouse, all you have to do is say to another doctor, like, I'm getting sued. And they know what that means, right? You don't have to explain why it hurts so much or why you feel so strongly or why it rocks your core. You don't have to explain that to most other physicians. You just say, like, I'm getting sued and I'm really having a hard time, and they know. And this is one reason why I feel like we should be talking more openly about it, because we should be there to support each other. The other thing that really helped me a lot was, I mentioned my chairman before, I had somebody externally who knew the case because my group was being sued. So he is the representative of our group, like knew all the details of the case. He knew everything. And he was able to say to me, you did everything right. You know, that was super helpful. And that may not be the case for everybody, but at least someone can sort of support you and say, like, you are a good doctor. Everything you did was understandable. I can see how it went this way. Just having some sort of external validation is super helpful. In terms of taking care of yourself, you can easily get lost in those first few weeks to months for some people. I think you need to be aware of your emotions. And that's something that's kind of hard to do, but you have to name them. And you also have to educate yourself, because what you want to do is you're going to be in this position where you feel like you're really helpless and you don't know what to do. And I'm going to give you the steps of what you really need to do. Like, there are actual legitimate steps you should take. So, you know, you get the envelope. The first thing you do is you call your malpractice insurance carrier and you notify risk management and you talk to your insurance carrier, and they will assign you someone to talk to, and they are going to assign you an attorney. And that's basically all you have to remember for the first steps. If you can remember to do that, and then to find yourself some sort of, there's a bunch of them. I would, you know, I'm going to recommend some books to you, but if you could also, you could look at ASEP has resources for people who are being sued. The professional societies all have resources. You start to educate yourself on the process. This is not the time to be doing research about your case. This is not the, don't contact the plaintiff. Don't do like any kind of research about what you're afraid you're being sued over. What you do at that time is just learn about the process. You get resources to kind of help you through the process. I recommend now to people getting those books ahead of time, like knowing that stuff ahead of time, because knowledge is power and familiarity will make you much more comfortable. It's that fear of the unknown and feeling alone that makes this process so much heavier than it should be for us. It should not destroy us the way it routinely does for lots of people. It should not be that way, especially when it's so common. So learn to read your emotions, acknowledge if you, you know, need help, and find someone that you can talk to who understands what it means to be in this position.
Awesome.
What did your hospital do to support you?
Okay. Not a lot. So well, at the time, I should correct, at the time I wasn't working for the same, my group was acquired by another group, and you know, that's how sort of I wound up at Brown. But I do want to make the point that you and your hospital may not always be on the same page as the process goes through. Now, some hospitals do have resources in terms of support. Many risk management programs have, you should probably know who your risk management person is by now, who that contact is by now. And they can certainly point you to resources in terms of talking and support. Some hospitals have peer-to-peer programs, which I highly recommend. We have a peer-to-peer program called the Apollo Program, where physicians who have been through the process can talk to physicians who are new to the process and kind of guide them through it and just be that, you know, that shoulder that people really need. But I want to say one thing in terms of caution, that is, you and your hospital should have separate representation. You might have the same insurance carrier, you might have, you know, there might be all sorts of reasons to try and sort of share representation. You do everything in your power to have your own representation and don't communicate through intermediaries. You talk to your lawyer, the hospital has their lawyer, because, you know, a lot of times there will be these very complicated decisions, turns into a very complicated game of chess. And at times it's kind of a dirty game of chess. This is, I've said to someone the other day that the most surprising thing about the process to me, oh, there was a lot of things I was really surprised at, but it's kind of dirty. And that's not the world that we're used to living in, right? We want everything out there. We deal in facts, and we're always looking to do the right thing for our patients. And we are always looking out for everybody else. This is not that world. This is a really, like, the stuff that happens is just, it's upsetting. It's frankly upsetting. It's just not a world that we're used to operating in. So hospitals and defendants aren't necessarily on the same page when it comes to, say, settling a case. And the actions of the hospital when they decide they want to settle, because they have fiduciary responsibilities to themselves, they may feel very differently about settling than you, who has not only might think about the financial aspect of things, but really you're kind of in it for your honor. And that's a different standpoint. And you may, and everybody has their own criteria of like, you know, whether a settlement is offered, whether or not to go through with it, what you can take in terms of defending yourself, all that stuff. The malpractice carrier absolutely plays into that decision. Sometimes they have final say, but I just want to caution you on that point.
I have a question about prevention. Everybody's read the ED course, and maybe some people here are doing it where it's like considered this, 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 or listed out their differentials. Does that ever help you, or could that hurt you in a lawsuit?
So in general, documentation should be your friend, okay? I want to make the point that you can document everything. You can, in a reasonable documentation, everything look great, but you are still at risk if you have any sort of adverse outcome. Where really good documentation helps you, you know, it'll help you a little bit in keeping you out of it. If there's a little fishing expedition ahead of time, sometimes there's a request for records first, and they just want to see what's going on. And if they present them to someone to review and they say like, oh, like, you know, you have a case here, then okay, they'll move forward. And sometimes if it's sort of like one of those iffy things and they get the records and they have someone review them and they say, no, this doctor was very conscientious. They did a lot of documentation. I think that they rendered really good care. I don't think you have a case. Then they might say, okay, I guess we don't have a case. So it's always in your best interest to document well. I don't think that it's any sort of guarantee that you're not going to get sued. Was there a second part to your question? There was.
Kind of like the specifics of your ED course saying like considered all these really big bad things, but you didn't order any tests for them, or listing out your differentials that you thought about.
Okay. So I think that it is helpful to sort of explain your thought process. And the flip side of that is you have to sort of explain why you did not think it was X, Y, or Z. And again, that will help you if there is sort of a fishing, because all of these cases will at some point be reviewed by, and we'll talk more about these guys too, by experts. Plaintiff's attorneys don't know medicine, most of them, right? They've been around a little bit and they can kind of have a sense of, you know, what's egregious and what's not, but they really don't understand the finer points of medicine. So they rely on other people to explain that to them. So if another physician could read your stuff and say like, this person was very thoughtful, you always want to document to show how thoughtful a person you are. Whether or not your case is just being reviewed for that discovery phase, or whether you go to trial and they're putting your chart up on this big gigantic screen where they will hash every single word and phrase. And it's unbelievable the amount of time that you will spend staring at your chart. I mean, hours upon hours and days upon days. The more you appear to be thoughtful and have considered all the options, I think in general, the better it is for you. I don't think it hurts you at all to say like, I thought about all of these things and here's why I don't think that they're necessary. I mean, in the end, someone with a retrospectoscope could say like, well, you were wrong. Like you should have thought about that. And you can say, well, at the time, what was in front of me, looking at what I was seeing, it didn't seem like it was necessary because of X. And also that will help you later on, because like I said, sometimes you won't remember, you know, in a lot of cases, people get knee and you're like, I don't remember a thing about this. I do know some people who document as little as possible, saying that I don't want to give anybody any ammunition. I don't think that that's really the best course. I think that your chart should reflect that you are a thoughtful and caring physician who really thought about all of the manifestations of this case and rendered your expert opinion on what you thought was going on and then moved forward from there. I think that that paints you in the best possible light.
I have another one that's not exactly related to that, but like you had said, when you come back after you're named or whatever, and you become a little more over-conservative or over-aggressive in your workups, do people get sued for ordering the test or for being too conservative or too aggressive in their workups? Is that like a phenomenon?
Not yet, it isn't. I think that maybe we'll start seeing some of that now, that people are kind of conscious about their, like what they're being billed for. But no, I haven't seen that. I think for the most part, usually it's because, you know, what's the most common thing people get sued for? It's sort of delayed diagnosis or failure to diagnose, right? So that happens a lot more when you don't order a lot of tests, frankly. And this is where we have a problem with defensive medicine, right? I know that there have been some studies that show that, you know, suggest that maybe tort reform doesn't prevent defensive medicine. The thing is that the culture of medicine is that we don't want to miss anything. Right. Whether it's maybe not just that we don't want to get sued, we don't want to get dragged into the process at all. Like it doesn't matter what the payout limit is at the end. Like we just don't want to be in it and we don't want to miss anything. We want to be good doctors. We want to find what needs to be found. We want to take good care of people. So there definitely is more of that feeling like you just like more is better. And I have not seen the flip side of that, but maybe it's coming because, you know, there have been lawsuits now about over aggressive resuscitation in people who were DNR. people can sue for really anything. Let's just make that point. I mean, and if you find a lawyer who is in various degrees of scrupulousness in every part of this business, and if you can find a lawyer to take your case, you can sue for just about anything. I know that there is all this stuff about, like, you know, proving negligence and proximate cause and blah, blah, blah. They often find a way to sort of bend whatever facts there are to suit their purposes. So just be aware that the best advice I can give you is just to practice good medicine, just to be the good doctors that you always aspired to be and that you'll continue to be. If you practice good medicine, then it won't guarantee you won't get sued. You probably will anyway, but you will be okay.
So along those lines, did you feel, and if so, or if not, you have any comment on it, when you got sued, did you start feeling distrustful of your patients? One, if you did, how'd you deal with it? Two, if you didn't, or if you can't really think of that, how the other people you've spoken to, how have they dealt with now thinking of their patients out to get them? Or you feel so distrustful of this rapport that you're trying to build with your patient that you kind of negate that whole process and work them up and you're like, well, I'm just going to cover all my bases. So it's more so, I don't want to be, while we are skeptical of what our patients say sometimes, I would hate to be so distrustful to a point where every patient, I just don't believe what they say. Did you experience that? And if so, how'd you deal with it?
Oh, I absolutely experienced that. And I think that's really very common. And I've heard that theme from people talking to me or just, and it's definitely worse in the beginning. Like there's a whole, you know, if you're, when I talk about working through the process, there's a very shared experience in the beginning among all of us, and there are varying degrees of how people work through that process. So if you work through the process, you can come back to a place where probably still a little scarred, and you're not always thinking in terms of, is this person going to sue me? But you can sort of be whole again, but it's always there in the back of your mind. Like that's not, I don't think that's ever going away. I would say that I spent a number of years feeling like that. And that really contributed to burnout. And this whole, we talk about these constellation of burnout symptoms and sort of seeing your patient as your adversary in some of these settings is certainly contributory to that. This sense of, if you lose your sense of this doctor-patient relationship, along with that, you lose a little bit of your sense of purpose. And without that sense of purpose, it becomes very difficult to continue on with the slog. That you could look at it one way, what we do every day, day in and day out, it's a rough job. If you add into that this, like, gosh, like I just see every patient as this person who's out to get me, it won't last for very long. But I think that's kind of a normal response for a lot of people. You just have to sort of keep looking for it. So I tell people, I think one of the ways that I got better was that I made a very conscious decision to look for the good. I look for the good, even in the crappiest of interactions. Like it's just where, if you look at it as in my capacity as a doctor, this person has come to me for help. In what way can I help them? And you stick to that, you will come a long way in healing yourself through this process. That's not the person who sued you. They are there presenting to you with a need. What can you do in your capacity to help them in their hour of need? And you do your best and you practice good medicine and you do it kindly and with as much goodwill as you can muster. Sometimes that's hard. You concentrate on the good. You have to like really focus on looking for the good and you will be able to sort of bring yourself back. And not everybody will stay. And I know people who have left and that's okay. If that's what you need to do to be well, then that's what you should do. But if you feel like you were put on this earth to be a doctor and that is all you've ever wanted to do, then this should not be the thing that drives you out of it.
I'm curious about like patient satisfaction survey comments, or I've all heard that like if you're sitting when you're talking to the patient, they view you as spending more time. And if the patient likes you or and think you believe that you care, and like you said, like if you're kind, then they're less likely to sue despite any outcomes. Do you get your patient satisfaction survey comments and do you review those and do you let those impact you?
I'm not a big fan of the patient survey comments. I mean, I like the good ones. I do get them and I'm interested in what they say. And sometimes I'm like, that's just a load of baloney. And sometimes I'm like, oh, like that's interesting that that's what they took away from this interaction. And that's not what I thought, but it does play into things because I think when families, by the way, are often the people that push people into suing. So you should have a rapport with families. A lot of times they'll be like, oh, you should sue that doctor. And then they think it over and they're like, okay, maybe you're right. So when a family's around, make sure that you have a rapport with the family. You keep everybody updated. They honestly feel like they are an integral part of that person's care. And if that patient is willing for them to be there, then you make them part of the decision-making process and loop them in as much as you can. Again, that kind of goes along with being a good doctor and being kind and caring and thoughtful. If you actually feel those things towards your patient, it's actually a lot easier to portray those things. And that's something that I'm continually working on as an attending is just to, you know, this every time you go in, like, I'm here to help this patient. I care about this patient. And then, you know, let's do this. The other thing about having that rapport with patients is that you will find stuff out that sometimes will change your management, right? They might actually reveal something to you that they might not have otherwise, that they would have held back. You've had that experience by now, probably, where like sort of midway through this thing, there's like this little nugget that comes out and you're like, wait a second, what? And then it kind of starts the wheels going in a different direction. You're like, oh my God, thank God, like they said that or that I picked up on that. And that is a lot more likely to happen if you spend a little time with the patient and you get information from other people and you're as thoughtful about the process as you can be. And yeah, people are more likely to sue when they feel like you didn't listen to them, right? If they're trying to tell you something and you're being dismissive or whatever, it makes people angry. And then if you add a bad outcome on top of that, yeah, they're going to want to sue because they're mad. Presumably someone is hurt or harmed in some way, and they're also really angry. I know that feeling. My elderly father wound up with gangrenous cholecystitis, and I was up in Rhode Island and he lived down in Delaware. And, you know, he went into the ER. He had a very early CAT scan in his course. It didn't show a whole lot, but clearly something was very wrong. And to make a long story short, I flew down and I asked to meet with a surgeon who blew me off for a long time. And I hung out for a long time waiting to talk to him all the while. And my, you know, father's getting more and more septic. When he finally came in, I actually introduced myself as a physician and he blew off every single thing I said. Cause I really was just like, I think we need X. I think we need Y. Like clearly he's getting sicker. Nah, he's going to be fine. I think you're just being like a worried daughter. Like I was sort of beside myself. And in the end, he went to the OR when he was pretty darn sick and he had gangrenous cholecystitis. And the surgeon came out to me and said, I am so surprised. And I was like, I am not surprised. And boy, am I mad. And I really thought to myself, like, you know what? Like, this might be it. Like, if he has a horrible outcome, like I would sue this guy. Like, I've been screaming at him that something is happening and I am a freaking doctor and he's not listening to me. That is a really powerful feeling. So if your patients feel like that and then you have a bad outcome, you can be sure that they're going to be thinking about litigation. Because if I was, then I can understand where they're coming from. So the best thing you can do, even when people are mad at you, when you first come in the room, like they're mad, they've been waiting for a long time. They've got this like chip on their shoulder and they are like ready to hurl it with you. There is a way to finesse that situation and bring them back in because your eye is on, I have to figure out why this person's here and I have to figure out how I can help them. And to do that, I need to recenter this conversation and bring us all together so that I can be of service to you. And so some of that service recovery jazz is annoying, but there is some truth to it, I think. And so I think in the meantime, like whatever feedback you get from people, I think is worth it. The other thing I would like to add is that what I tell people is that you should behave at all times as though you are being recorded because you probably are. You know, like everyone's got a phone these days and we know about some cases where people have said really not good things when patients had their phones on. There's the classic, everyone's probably heard about that woman who was being sedated and the anesthesiologist was talking about her. Like that recording came to light. Just every time you're in a room, behave as though they've got their phone and they're recording everything you say. And that actually goes a long way.
So you were speaking about some books that you read. Is there one or two that you definitely recommend for residents? And then is there something that you would recommend as a new attending or if they are different at all?
I have three and they're all sort of different flavors. So this is called When Good Doctors Get Sued. and it's by Angela Dodge and Stephen Fitzer. And neither of them is an MD. And Angela Dodge is a PhD and Fitzer is a JD. But this is the book that a colleague gave me when I was being sued, and it really spoke to me. And I didn't know like thing one about what was happening or what to do. And it was a very good guide to sort of the nuts and bolts of the process, a little bit about the guidance and like how to behave during a debt was all totally foreign to me. Your attorney will also be like a very good guide through this process. They are very good at instructing you about how, you know, the nuts and bolts and how to be during deposition. They will prepare you. So you have to make sure that you have an attorney you trust. And then once you have that attorney, you trust them, you use them as a resource. But this one I found very helpful. It's short, but I kind of keep it around. It actually lives in my nightstand. So if I need it, I can, you know, it's like a little talisman. So this one is pretty practical. This is How to Survive a Medical Malpractice Lawsuit. This is Eileen Brenner. This is also pretty short, very to the point, and also quite helpful. It sort of glosses over, I feel like, a little bit of the emotional stuff. There's a little bit in there about like, oh, you're not going to feel so great. But the Bible of all of this is this book, which is by Sarah Charles, called Adverse Events, Stress, and Litigation. So if you're really interested in getting into the nitty-gritty of, from the psychiatrist's perspective, of the psychological process of what happens to physicians when they're sued, that's your go-to. It's a little longer, it's a little heavy, it's a little dense, there's a lot of theory. But, you know, I found it helpful in terms of like in an analytical way to sort of stand back and be like, oh, this is like everything I'm working through. Like, this makes sense to me. So, OK, like, and clearly, if it's written out like that, like, I'm not the only one that feels like this. So it was very helpful to know that, like, this is a normal response to an abnormal degree of stress that we all have to find our way through. And that the best way for us to do that is to talk to people who have had shared experiences or to understand what it is that we're going through. And not just once, you're going to have to do it a bunch of times for your whole, because this is a very long process. It's not like you get named and then you kind of get over that and then you're better. This is a very long, if you're in it for the long haul, so like I'm in year 12, I am an outlier. Let me just say that. Like most of them are usually like 3 to 5 years and you're out, but it takes a long time to get out of the process. And so you kind of have to have like a long-term strategy. It's a chronic stressor with acute exacerbations. It's almost like an illness that you have to manage. And you just need as many tools at your disposal, and you can't expect to be over it like right away. You're going to have to, it's a process, but it's a process that you can absolutely work through and be whole again, maybe a little different, but whole again afterwards, and still find some meaning in what you do. And I think that's important.
I'm curious how social media has impacted litigation and then the stress of litigation. Like, has it increased it, or do people find support using social media?
So that's a very interesting question. So some of you may be on some of these larger social media groups for emergency physicians, like MDocs is a big Facebook group, but there's certainly a lot of physician presence on Twitter as well. From my perspective, just being in the groups that I am, this is sort of my individual perspective, because I don't think there's certainly not any data. There's like a huge lack of data on any of this stuff. So if anybody wants to do some research, go for it. Someone has sort of reached out to me saying they'd like to do some qualitative. I'm really not a researcher. Like I'm a talker, but I'm not like a researcher, but I'm very interested in everyone's stories. But being on social media and being relatively active in social media, I have seen in the last couple of years, a lot of people post about, and that's actually how I found a lot of people to talk to me, to share their stories. I basically put a call out in one of these social media groups and was knocked over by the number of people who want to talk about their experiences. And to a person, every single one of them is like, I did not know what to expect. I didn't know anything about this process. I was totally lost. There are a couple of things coming out that I find are very interesting trends. So people, I think, feel comfortable once their case is over. I've seen some posts where people are saying, like, I have to prepare for a deposition. What do I do? Or I'm getting sued and I'm really feeling really awful about it. Like, help me feel better. And there is like hundreds of comments that come after that. And they're all, you know, they're pretty good. I actually, you know, after when my verdict was overturned, I put a post out just saying, like, you know what? I've been being sued for X many years. The trial was the longest and hardest experience probably of my life. And I can't believe I have to go back. I feel like Katniss Everdeen in The Quarter Quell. Like, how could they possibly make her go back to the Hunger Games? Like, that's basically what it felt like. And it was interesting. Like, the comments were very supportive. Some of them were just like, no, you have to go back to trial. And in my head, I was like, no, I don't have to do that. It just was very, you know, it's interesting. But you definitely feel that other people have this shared experience and they want to reach out and support you. And I find that, I think that's helpful. And I think it's helpful for the lurkers on social media to see people put their experiences out there and then to have this sort of flood of positive comments and supportive comments out there, people offering to talk, people offering like, message me, I'll support you. I think that all of that is quite positive as long as you're smart about what you put out there, right? Unless your case is totally done, you cannot put out the details of what's going on your case on social media. You can talk about your feelings. And I encourage people to do that because sometimes you'll reach out from a place where you feel like I need someone who gets it just to like tell me I'm going to be okay. And in these private groups, it's a pretty good place to do that. But anything in there is really, it's still discoverable. Just consider it all discoverable. Don't put the details of your case out there on social media. Just look at it as a source of support. There was a post recently, and actually I just interviewed that doctor that I thought was really very compelling that was out there in the same Facebook group. And what that was, I mean, this guy went above and beyond and talking about he had a great rapport with the family. The patient who passed away, his father came back the next day to thank him and just telling him, like, I know that you did everything in your power. Like, he really, when I learned all the details, I was like, oh my God, like, I think I would have missed this. Like, I can't believe you even found this. And 2 weeks later, his wife was in there getting the records, and then he was sued. Most of his sort of rage was, this is in Illinois, which is a particularly bad, very plaintiff-friendly conditions there. And a lot of it was just sort of this feeling of being forced to settle by these plaintiff's attorneys who make these threats of going after you for punitive damages or garnishing your wages. And there are all sorts of ugly tactics that people use. And the expert witnesses, that's another source. I know of one case in particular where it led to a suicide, the anger against expert witnesses who are being paid exorbitant amounts of money and sometimes, or more than sometimes, are sort of cannibalistic. They make it sound like if you practice real medicine, you know, you have to remember that juries rely on these experts. They don't know medicine, right? So it almost becomes a who has the more reliable expert. Do you like this expert? Do you like that expert? Who can explain things more simply? But these experts who review cases and say like, oh yeah, like absolutely, this is completely negligent, when it's patently false. And, you know, anybody like without a stake in the game reviewing the case would say like, no, that's totally reasonable. I would have done the same thing, or that he did more than I would have done. There is a special anger that kind of brews inside people, inside doctors in that situation. And so it turned into this interesting scenario where expert witnesses were being outed on social media and people were calling up their commentary. Now, there is a danger in that because people, you know, they're always afraid, you know, can we sue for a libel or things like that. But now I think people are becoming more aware that after the fact, you can bring to the attention of the professional societies any egregious expert witness testimony, and you can have that submitted for a review. And we should probably all be doing that more. But I think that we, you know, one of my beefs is that we as a professional society, as professional societies, should be doing more to police our own expert witnesses. Right now, no one gets any training on how to do it. There's no like ethics standards that people have to swear to uphold. There's no body that reviews anybody's testimony. It's like the Wild West out there. So there are some people who do proceed ethically, and and we need those people. And there are people out there who don't, and we don't need those people. And we need to be able to find them and kick them out. But we don't have that system in place yet, unless people actually start reporting testimony more. So that was a long-winded answer to your question, but the social media thing is very interesting.
One more question, I think. Did you feel apprehensive of telling your colleagues that you got sued? Did you feel like they were going to judge you or may think less of you?
Oh, absolutely. And that's how a lot of people feel when they first, you just want to keep your head down and pretend it didn't happen. And then you're faced with some choices. Some people never talk about it. You know, I actually know of one guy who did not even tell his wife for 4 years that he was being sued. And which is, I would not recommend, but people feel you feel ashamed. And as I said before, part of the stigma, I think, is because we don't talk about how common it is, right? If something literally happens to all of us, like, why are we stigmatizing it? And if we can just come to a place where it becomes sort of a like, oh, yep, you know, I got sued. Like, oh yeah, this is a big case. Like, yeah, it's XYZ. I think that would really, I don't know. That's sort of a, maybe it won't ever really be like that, but it should be more like that. It should be more normalized because it's kind of a weird abnormal normal, but it's kind of a normal thing to happen in the course of being a physician sometime during your career. Like, this is going to happen. I think that it's unrealistic for me to say that that's what I would like to see, but we have to do something because the degree to which people feel these feelings is in a lot of people so strong that it literally is capable of ruining not just their professions, but their personal lives. You know, I've spoken to, you know, the widow of a physician who committed suicide. I've spoken to people who sort of openly admit that they had death wish, that they started drinking, that they had unhealthy relationships, that they ruined their relationship, that they, you know, became withdrawn from their partner and felt like they couldn't talk about it. Like, these things have really severe repercussions if you let them eat you up. And they will if you don't guard yourself against that. If you have an identity where, you know, as most of us do, there's, you know, we're so intertwined between our personal lives and our physician lives. Like, there's really, for a lot of us, not any clear, distinct line because so much of our lives have been spent in the pursuit of this one thing. And it means really almost everything to us. And when it comes to someone standing from the outside, pointing a finger at you, accusing you of negligence and every other awful thing that they can think of to say that is your fault, it's not just that it feels terrible. It's just, it really rattles your psyche. We can advocate for change, but change is not coming anytime soon. So I think we're all going to be practicing in the current environment for a while. But we need to do what we can for each other, because we're all kind of in this together and it's happening to all of us. And so the more supportive and open we can be with each other when it happens, I think the better off we're all going to be. I would say one last thing in a way that I think that everybody can make things better for each other, that there are certain ways that you can be a better colleague to someone who is being sued. So let's say you hear that someone is being sued, but it's a very like, I don't want to talk about it, like hush, hush, like everybody's like, you know, you don't know if they want to talk about it. I would say to you that it's okay to say to them, you know what? I just want to say, and you don't have to talk about it right now if you don't want to, but I heard that you were getting sued and I just want you to know that whatever's going on, I think you're a really great doctor. Or whatever you can say that's supportive to make that person understand, like, you know what, I have respect for you and it doesn't change because you're being sued. I know you as a doctor. I've seen you work and whatever's coming at you, I think you're better than. And I'll share one other story with you related to that. During the process of when I was being sued, I was still kind of in the early stages. There was a very high profile case in our state. And I didn't know the defendant. I knew who she was. But this was like a front page news, almost everyday case because it involved the relative of a celebrity. And, you know, the hospital was in it. Everybody was in it. And it was literally like news vans parked outside the house, like every single day, this thing was in the news. And I remember thinking like, my God, what must it be like to be this person, to be this doctor, right? And when you sort of read the details of the case, you're just like, oh my God, like that can happen to anybody. So one day I read the paper and I thought, you know what? I'm going to write her a letter. So I got out a piece of stationery and I just wrote her a note. And I just said, you know what? I have been following this in the case. I don't know you. I know who you are. Everybody says that you're a great doctor. I'm going through this process myself. I just want you to know that I'm thinking of you. I can only imagine how hard this is. I don't know exactly what my wording was, but basically it was just some supportive stuff. And I found her address from a friend of a friend and I sent it to her and then I didn't think about it again until she showed up at my trial. And when we met, it was pretty emotional because, you know, she told me the story how, and she didn't, you know, she didn't write back. She nothing, there was nothing like that. But she said that my note arrived a day when she was really feeling the lowest of her low points and just did not know if she could put one foot in front of the other anymore. And your mind starts to go to all sorts of really dark, terrible places when you get into that hole. And she said her husband brought her the letter and it was like this handwritten note. And she opened up and she read it. And she had a good cry. And then she thought, okay, like I'm going to get up and I'm going to do this one more. She just came at a very good time. So she came to my trial And she just said, you know what? I knew you said that you were going soon. We have friends in common. They said when it was, I just wanted to be here and to tell you that I'm here for you. And it was huge. It was really huge. I think that we don't do that enough for each other. And not you don't have to write a letter or whatever. Like, if, I mean, certainly do if that comes to you. But just saying to someone, I know this is happening to you. I want you to know that I think you're a really good doctor. It goes a really long way, because that erosion of self-confidence is one of the hardest parts of this. And so hearing from your colleagues whom you respect, or even if it's an attending and you're a resident, you can say, like, you know what? I heard, I think you're an awesome teacher and I think you're a great doctor and I want to be just like you. I couldn't tell you how far that would go for someone. So, you know, so just be mindful of those things and just keep, and if you think that someone really needs help, make sure they get it, because it can wind up being a pretty dangerous situation for some people. So make sure, you know, you walk them to help, you get them what they need, because this is a situation that's fraught with danger for people who are at risk, and we're all kind of at risk. So we should be talking about it more. So
this is awesome. I mean, I thank you so much, Gita. Thank you, the rest of you guys, for joining us. We probably could spend a week just talking about the process and how to go from soup to nuts and how to deal with every portion of it. But I think this is an awesome, awesome hour that we spent and getting some insight to somebody who's actively dealing with it and getting an idea of how do we deal with it ourselves when it unfortunately will inevitably be one our shoes as well. And it's going to suck, but I think this is going to help us kind of go along the way. So, you know, just to touch on some of the points that I think are really important that we can take away from is, you know, when you do initially get sued, find someone to talk to, try and learn ahead of time what this process is like, so that if and when you are involved in this process, it's not sideswiping you and you're kind of in a whirlwind. And then lastly, be supportive of your colleagues, even at the most basic of levels. Like, if you think about that intern who goosed the tube, but is a good physician, it's a thing of, hey, it just didn't work for you, but you're still a good doctor. Don't think less of yourself. I think it's the same thing along this lines. If there's a colleague who's in those shoes, who's getting sued, try and turn to them and just remind them that they're still a good person and still a good physician. And I think lastly, try and build that rapport with your patient and build that rapport with that patient's family, because research does show when you've built that good rapport, even in some negative outcomes, they're less likely to sue you. And if you are sued and you're trying to find that path back to normalcy for yourself, try and find that good in every patient encounter that you're involved in. So I think those are some huge takeaway points that you guys can take away both back to your residency in the future from here. And I definitely will. Thank you so much, Gita. I really appreciate your time. And thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful night.
And that wraps up a great episode from the Wellness Think Tank. Special thanks to our exclusive sponsors, US Acute Care Solutions. You can reach us also on Twitter at WellnessTT. Until next time, remember that residency training should be about thriving and not just surviving.